Okay, welcome to the call. Again, today we are going to be talking about assertiveness coaching today. It's an important topic. Today's lecture is one that you will find that this topic comes up for you perhaps again and again over time. As you coach, undoubtedly you will find yourself in a position of needing to educate or help educate individuals, perhaps more than the occasional individual, about assertiveness. Today we're going to talk about what assertiveness is and what assertiveness is not, and we're going to give some examples of assertiveness, and we're going to discuss what to do with that fly in our soup. We are also going to talk a little bit about human rights. We're going to talk about body language as well as externalizing. We're going to talk a little bit about avoidance, and we're going to talk a little bit about action versus reaction. So if you're ready and you have your crib notes handy, let's begin. Assertiveness. Assertiveness is defined by the English dictionary, defines assertiveness this way, as pushing oneself forward aggressively. And this is precisely the problem that many individuals see in assertiveness. Assertion itself is not really aggression. In fact, assertiveness is simply the case of making a positive effort to one's need. In other words, seeing that one's need is met. Assertion is really a healthy behavior. Aggression is not. Care in Action defines assertiveness as follows: asking for what one wants and acting on it to get what one needs with respect to the rights and feelings of others. And finally, Wikipedia defines assertiveness like this: assertiveness is a skill taught by many personal development experts and the subject of many popular self-help books. It is linked to self-esteem and considered an important communication skill. Now, if you ask anyone you know, any family member or any friend, and you ask them if they feel that assertiveness is a communication skill, most of them will probably say no, that they don't think of it as a communication skill. They do think of it as a behavior, and if you delve a little deeper, you will find that indeed they believe that that behavior equals aggression. They see no difference in that. Really, that's a great definition, I think. Assertiveness is considered an important communication skill. That's awesome. It's an important communication skill. If you ask your friends, please write it down. Find out what they say. Find out what they think assertion means so that you will have that in your own little back pocket when you talk to other people about it. Assertion is almost always equated with aggression. In fact, assertiveness training is really just a practical approach, if you will, to saying no. It's a practical approach to saying no without actually saying the word no. Now, without actually saying the word no, can you assist your client in developing the ability to resist or sidestep being maneuvered into doing something that he or she really doesn't want to do? You tell me. Can't we all use a little bit more of that kind of training? I think we all can. So knowing a little bit about the difference between assertiveness and aggression is really going to come in handy when you're dealing with your client, because you're going to find that you're going to be talking to your clients in around circumstances that have to do with job development, with personal development, with family relationship development, which is going to mean that at some point the difference between assertion and aggression is going to come up. So, of course, there are times, when the N word, which is the no word, really is a necessity. There are times that we have to say no. But in our experience, there's so much anxiety around the possible consequences of using the word no that people don't say it usually. They just cannot bring it forward. It's a word that kind of gets stuck on the roof of their mouth or in the back of their throat, that they just can't bring themselves to say the word no. Saying the word no just brings up too much bad stuff for them. The reaction that they've had from other people in the past just comes floating in at great speed when they think about having to say the word no. Even if they're absolutely filled to the brim with activities and have no more time to expend in doing new activities, they find it hard to say no when someone asks them to do one more thing. When that one more thing is put on the plate, they still take it on. Behavior really can be divided up into three modalities. So let's just talk about what the three modalities of behavior are. One is aggression or aggressive. One is assertive. And one is passive. So essentially, aggression will include the following behaviors. Being overly competitive would be considered being aggressive. Being loud and boisterous can often be considered being aggressive. Belittling others is absolutely considered by most people aggression. Being offensive to other people is usually considered aggression. Being judgmental or critical is usually considered aggression. Being impatient or irritable is often considered aggression. And being violent or abusive as well, in most cases, people will consider that to be a form of aggression. So key phrases of aggression would include things like you'd better, or else, just stop it, or something even like shut up. All of those key phrases would be considered phrases that are used in an aggressive way. So to be passive, let's talk about passive for a moment. What would be the following types of behavior that would fit into a list of what we would consider to be passive? Here they are. Being anxious to please. Avoiding conflict at all costs would be considered being passive. Avoiding discretion or decision-making, I should say. Sorry, not discretion. Avoiding decision-making is considered being passive. Self-blame would also be considered passive. So would self-criticism. Rejection would be considered passive. If you reject compliments, it would be considered passive. Frequent apologizing is definitely considered passive, and we probably know, each of us, someone in our life who is always apologizing for something, even when it's something that's totally beyond their control and their ability to control. Low self-esteem is usually considered passive behavior. Putting yourself last, absolutely passive behavior. Just sitting and keeping quiet when the rest of the world is running around you is usually considered being passive. Nothing to say, nothing to add. You're just passive. You're watching the world going by. And, of course, feeling weak or inconfident in some way or some area tends to make us believe that you are indeed passive. So passive keywords would be words like sorry. And again, we all have a sorry in our life. We all have one of those individuals, a friend or a family member, that we hear it constantly. Another phrase might be, would you mind if? Another phrase might be, I'm sure you're right. We even know people who will say, I'm sure you're right, even when they know the other person isn't right, because it's just easier to let it slide, easier to go along with the flow. Let's look really quickly then at assertive behavior and what that list might look like. Now, this list is a lot shorter. It just happens to be that way. It probably is not all inclusive. But here is a list of what assertive behavior might include. Listening to others. Stating needs clearly. Always stating your needs clearly and concisely. Expressing your feelings appropriately would be considered assertive. Coping positively with disagreements would absolutely be considered assertive behavior. Being trustworthy is usually considered assertive behavior. And taking responsibility for something is usually considered assertive behavior. Assertive keywords would include things like I think, I believe, I understand your viewpoint. I really do need blah, 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 whatever it is. Those would all be keywords that would be considered to mix in the flow of assertive behavior. Invariably, most of us experience a combination of all three of these behaviors. We're probably a mix of all three. And as we have areas in our lives in which we feel less confident or find certain things irritating, these behaviors tend to sort of come up in waves, and we sort of shuffle from one to the other to some degree. We all have our weak points, our weak spots. The role of an assertiveness coach, or a coach teaching or sharing about assertiveness per se, is to encourage the client to be assertive in many areas of their life as possible, just as many areas as possible. Life is not as black and white as having it sort of to be top dog or underdog. It's not that way. There is a middle path where we can respect the feelings, the rights, the needs of other people in our lives, of our friends, of our family. And it's really this equality that is the hallmark of the assertive behavior. So that's really what we're talking about. There are three different ways of making a complaint in a restaurant. Let's look at those. And that'll bring to the point very clearly assertiveness versus passive versus assertion. So an aggressive thing that one might say in a restaurant is, I'm not eating this. There's a blankety-blank fly in it. We've all heard that, right? The passive way of saying this same thing to a waiter might be something like, well, excuse me, I'm really sorry to bother you. I don't normally make a fuss, but it seems like there's a fly in my soup. I'm really very sorry to mention it to you. That would be very passive, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not probably very effective either. Now, the assertive person usually is quite to the point and clear and would say something like, excuse me, I have a fly in my soup. Would you please replace it? Thank you. The aggressive customer will no doubt cause a scene, cause some embarrassment, and all of that likelihood all runs into play there. The passive customer will probably remain sort of red-faced and feeling guilty and may or may not get their soup replaced and have to eat around that fly, while the assertive customer will receive just what was required and will move on and enjoy the remainder of the evening. That's the plain truth of it. So, clarity and directness, which we would consider assertiveness here, is not the same as bluntness or rudeness, which is considered aggression. Can we see the difference there?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully
yes.
That was sort of a good explanation of where the differences lie. But interestingly enough, the dictionary defines, as I said earlier, assertiveness as an in-your-face kind of style. That's basically what it's saying assertiveness is. It's all about declaring yourself, defending your rights, thrusting yourself forward according to the dictionary. That's what it looks like it's saying. So the question raised is this. Do I have to be pushy to be assertive? And I'm going to throw that out to you. I want to hear a couple of comments. Do we have to be pushy to be assertive? Someone feel free to jump in about a little bit of discussion here about assertiveness.
I don't think you have to be pushy because if you have, if you're clear about what you want, you just say it, and you know you don't need to be pushy because you don't need that.
Who is that who said that? Whose voice?
That was Linda.
Yeah, Linda, absolutely true. And you have a very nice calming voice. If you were to say, excuse me, there seems to be a fly in my soup, would you please replace it? I thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
If you were to say it in the voice that you just talked to me in just now, there's nothing offensive about that. It's just the way it is. It's factual. There's a fly in my soup. Can't eat it. Would you replace it? Thank you very much. And chances are you'd get your needs met. Chances are you will. Anyone else like to make any kind of comments about that?
This is Tana.
Sure, Tana.
I like to go by the assumption that, you know, reasonable people will handle things in a reasonable way. occasionally I found that I needed to be pushier than I like to be in order to get the soup replaced, so to speak. But for the most part, it's like you just explain clearly and try to keep the, you know, any guilt mongering, stuff like that out of it. And people usually respond to me.
Yeah, if we really make it sound like it's the waiter's problem, are we really going to get the help we need?
No.
Probably not. You know, like if we're going to say, you know, the flies dropped in the soup and it's your fault and you didn't see it on the way over to the table, we're probably not going to get the result we want.
That would put them on the defensive.
It puts them on the defensive, absolutely. And tone of voice certainly will put them on the defensive. And I mean, I've been in restaurants with people where they've not found a fly in their soup. I'm not going to say they have, but they'll make a special request of their meal, and they will. It arrives, and it's obviously not what they want. And you can watch people when this happens in a restaurant. And what happens? They get red-faced. They get loud. They get mean. And really, all they do is they end up having an hour of sitting in a restaurant, having an absolute lousy time because they didn't handle it well. And they allow that to sort of, they allow that anger and aggression to spill out of them, and it just carries on. Because once it's out and it's spilled over, it's really hard to contain it and bring it all back in.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult to take it back. You've let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. The aggression is let loose, and it's very hard to rein it back in. And they'll sit there through their whole meal, even if it's been replaced, and still feel that aggression and leave just as angry as they were when they first got their meal delivered and it wasn't quite right. So it really is a good way of sort of digesting what aggression is and what it looks like. So the key to assertiveness is making clear what's required and then sticking to it without falling prey to being provoked into changing or to challenging anything or anyone. We don't need to provoke. Being provoked is a common throwback to assertiveness, for sure. And provoking generally takes on one of three forms. So let's just talk about what that is. There are three forms of provoking. Number one would be argumentative provoking. That's certainly not going to get your food replaced very quickly. There's manipulative provoking, where you're trying to manipulate someone into doing something, obviously. And there's irrelevant logic provoking, none of which really works very well. Doesn't really work very well, because in the midst of doing all those things, you're not really saying what you want and need and expect. You're just sort of making a scenario out of it. So an example of argumentative provoking includes statements like, if you didn't like the way I do it yourself. Is that going to cause an argument? Have we all heard that at home?
Mm-hmm.
You bet. We've all heard it at home. That's nothing new. An example of manipulative provoking might include something like, you know how much I hate having to do that. It's so unfair. Well, sorry, but the dishes and laundry have to be done, right? Manipulative provoking doesn't really help. An example of irrelevant logic might include something like, if you did it yourself, you'd be sure it would be done the way you want it. I think we've all heard that, too. What does that do? It causes an argument. 100% of the time, it's a throwaway comment like that that's irrelevant to what you're talking about, really. It's not going to help you get your needs met, and it's going to cause a lot of stir of trouble. So the difficulty arises as soon as the provoking is responded to. Then it starts. The guns are out. They're blazing. The provoking comment is the bait. And it's easy to get hooked. I mean, we get hooked. We hear something like that coming past our ears, we jump right in and we're hooked. And returning to the earlier example of the waiter, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. The waiter may provoke with such comments like, I'm too busy, or I'm short-staffed at the moment, or you'll have to wait. Undoubtedly, there might be some of that. But how we handle that coming back at us is going to be the key. That's going to be the key. Something like the solution to that would be, I appreciate that you're busy and under pressure, you're short-staffed, I feel for you, but I still would need my soup replaced just as quickly as you could do that. The waiter will eventually get the message through that, that he, you know, whether he's good-natured or whether he's sulky, it doesn't really matter, but he's going to get the message through that, that the customer will have to have a replacement bowl of soup to get their needs met. So it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So our reaction is all important. It's important to understand the matter of problem ownership as related to asserting needs, okay? So the problem of the fly in the soup is initially the customer's. There's no doubt about that. You're sitting there, the fly's in your soup, it's your problem. Initially, it's your problem. The customer then asserts his or her right to have the fly in the soup, or should I say the soup, fly-free. How about putting it that way? You know, you assert the right to have soup that's fly-free. So by clearly stating what the requirements are to the waiter and maintaining the stance that the soup should be fly-free, the customer really then transfers the problem from self to the waiter where it belongs, because you can't go in and get your own soup. Well, I guess you could, but you'd cause a stir in the kitchen. Really, you can't go in and get your own soup. So you've transferred the problem, you've done what you need to do, and you can move on. You can move on. So it's now up to the waiter to deal effectively with the problem. Aggression, of course, means not accepting the problem the way it is, and passivity means taking additional problems. The passivity problem might be what? Can anybody see what the passivity problem might be there? Maybe you wouldn't want to disturb someone. Maybe it's going to make the cook angry now because they're going to have to get new soup, and it's going to go from, you know, from the waiter to the cook, and then the cook's going to take it out on his staff, and the sous chef isn't going to be happy, and it's going to go right down the line. I mean, we can make scenarios, but basically we need to be able to put things back where they need to be in perspective, put the problem back on who it needs to be with in order to get the job done and get our needs met, and to do it in a nice way. So doing it in a nice way means that there are fundamental human rights, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all have fundamental human rights. So whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, or whether you're a child, you have the following human rights. Let's just look at those really quickly. What are the fundamental human rights? And this probably is not inclusive, but it's a good place to start. So your fundamental human rights, got my tongue stuck there, fundamental human rights are to state your needs. You have to help your client to learn how to state their needs, or they're not going to have their needs met. The fundamental human right you also have is to set priorities based on those needs. To be treated with respect. To be respected as an equal human being, man, woman, or child. To express your feelings is a fundamental human right. Your client may not know that. You may face that quite often because a client often doesn't know much about expressing themselves. If they're going to be dealing with you in working with issues to do with work or workplace environment or something like that, they may not feel that they have the right to express their feelings, but of course they do. They also have the right to express their own values and opinions. To say yes or no for ourselves is a fundamental human right. To make mistakes is a fundamental human right. That's usually the thing we're least tolerant about with people, but it's a fundamental human right. We all make mistakes. We may not tolerate it well of others and tolerate it a little better with ourselves, but it's a fundamental human right that we all have. To change our minds is a fundamental human right. Where it becomes a problem is when we're not letting others know that we've changed our mind. To say, I don't understand, is a fundamental human right. I don't understand. Please explain that to me. To ask for what we want is a fundamental human right. To decline responsibility for the problems of our own is a fundamental human right. Not very effective, perhaps. And to decline responsibility for problems of others, absolutely, is a fundamental human right. And to interact with other people without needing their approval is a fundamental human right. Does anyone have anything they can add to this list? This is certainly not all inclusive, but is there anything that we can add to this list? Any fundamental human rights that we can add while we're making our list?
This is Charlene.
Yes.
Shouldn't it be setting like an internal boundary be a right as well?
Setting internal boundaries, is that a right? Is that
yes.
what you said?
Yeah.
Let's throw it on the floor. Let someone else make a comment about that. Is setting an internal boundary a human right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
or,
it is.
I think everyone deserves that.
Everyone deserves that. You should be able to set your own boundaries, absolutely. Anything else that we can add to this list?
To simply exist.
To simply exist as a human right? Who said that?
Jill.
Jill, I like that one, yeah. Yeah, to simply exist as your human right, yeah. So it's the last one on the list that can probably give us the most difficulty, to interact with other people without needing their approval. Or as Jill said, to simply exist also fits there. So instinctively, we often look at other people for approval. We're always looking for approval as human beings. It tends to be our nature. Well, granted, there are some of us who probably release that to some degree, but for the most part, most of us are looking for approval. We have an inherent need to be acceptable to others for whatever reason and for whatever stance that might be, whether it be our physical outlook, being handsome or pretty, the way we're dressed, being dressed well, being dressed casual, being dressed down. I mean, there's all different stages and colors and hues of that. This is our human nature, though. In fact, the more that we are concerned about others' opinions of us, the less we really probably value ourselves. And you may find that with your client. So you will be grappling with issues of helping the client to understand that their needs must be met. Yes, we have responsibilities to our bosses, to our families, to our spouses, to our friends, you know, to our partners, whatever that is. We all have responsibilities, but ultimately our responsibility is to ourselves, and we must value ourselves. So how does that all fit? So that's really what you'll be grappling with your client, to help them understand where assertiveness fits in the greater scheme of things and acceptance by others. With assertiveness comes less of a need to be accepted by others and probably more of a sense of being comfortable and in acceptance of others, if you will. Let's talk about body language, because I really think this is interesting. 55% of our summing up of another person is based on appearance. 55% is based on appearance. 37%, it is said, is based on mannerisms and tone of voice. 37%. And only 8% is actual verbal content. Can you believe that? 8% is only actual verbal content when we're summing up somebody else. We all know what an aggressive person looks like. If I say to you, can you see in your mind someone who's aggressive? We probably all have someone pop into our mind really quickly. We all can put a face to aggression. They're full of tension, and they're ready to fight. That's how they go through the world. That's how their movement is. That's all they know. That's how they work. That's how they define themselves. We know their mannerisms. We know their tone of voice. They're usually argumentative. They tend to be a little bit hard. By this point, it doesn't really matter what we say when we're into it with an aggressive person. We're probably going to end up losing unless we're assertive. And usually these people come in already primed to receive some kind of verbal attack, and they're just ready to give it to you, even if it's just all-out war and all you've really done is just said, there's a fly in my soup. So it's an interesting sort of thing to look at. So how does a person look and act assertively? Can someone give me any idea how someone might look and act assertively? If you're an assertive person, an assertive person walks into the room, let's say that. What does that person look like? Someone tell me.
Self-respecting.
It looks like they're trying to find a fight.
Assertive people look like trying to find a fight?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Someone else said something as well.
Self-respecting.
Okay, self-respecting. Okay,
if you're assertive. Rather than aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, the one about coming in looking for a fight is the aggressive person. You must remember. So an assertive person wouldn't necessarily be looking for a fight unless their car just got hit in the outside. It can turn us pretty quick, right? So we could come in with that, but hopefully we can control that. We can control that assertion in a way that's helpful. But how else might someone else look assertive in the way they look when they come in a room? They're probably not
confident.
Yep, confidence. They're probably not slouched.
They look you in the eye.
They look you in the eye. There was another voice there too.
They're probably standing upright.
Pardon me?
They're probably standing up straight.
Yep, probably standing up straight. They probably look tall. Shoulders are probably back.
And they're not really, I don't think they're really affected by what other people's comments.
Probably not. You know, they probably don't look around wondering if everybody's looking at them. They're probably not concerned whether or not there's approval when they walk in.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. And absolutely, someone said eye contact. Eye contact would probably be direct. It wouldn't be shifty, you know, because shifty eye contact is usually considered passive. And or it could also be considered intimidating. If shifty eye contact is being done by an aggressive person, it's usually considered intimidating. Voice tone should be relaxed and clear if you're assertive, probably. You're going to be relaxed. You're not going to be whining. You're not going to be mumbling. If you're mumbling, you're probably passive. That's my thought. And if you're sarcastic and hostile, you're probably aggressive. Right? And finally, gestures would be relaxed, probably. They'd be natural. They wouldn't be fidgety or nervous, because if they're fidgety or nervous, that would probably be a passive person. And if your movement is considered confrontational, you're probably moving your hands a lot when you talk. You might be shifting your head a little when you talk, and you're giving off attitude. That's probably going to be considered aggressive. So the more assertive person appears to probably be more effective in their communication and also in their presentation of self. They're probably going to seem to be more put together and more at ease, no matter where they walk into. So let's talk a little bit about saying no just for a moment. Because many of us are brought up to feel that we should always be saying yes, right? I mean, were you taught that way, many of you?
Sometimes.
Yeah, or else. Absolutely. Many of us are taught that way, you know, that we're to say yes to most situations, and that no would probably cause some kind of offense. That's usually how we're brought up as children. So we will therefore say yes to many situations, even when we don't want to, even when we don't feel it's right for us, as we concern ourselves about the approval of others. So the refusal of something is often perceived by the person who wants to say no as being several or one of these things. I think it's several, really. So it could be perceived as being callous or uncaring. It could be perceived as being mean or selfish. It could be perceived as being small-minded or petty. And saying no could even be perceived as being rude. And if we do find the courage to say no, oftentimes what we do is what?
Feel bad.
What's that?
Feel bad for it.
Yeah. What else do we do?
Apologize.
We apologize. I think I heard one other voice there, too.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to pat it with any number of excuses to soften the blow, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what we do? If you get asked out on a dinner date, you know, with a friend that you really don't want to go on, what do? We very seldom just say, no, I'm sorry. I can't make it that day. I have no excuses. No, sorry, I can't make it that day. We don't usually do that. We usually say, no, I can't make it that day at all. You know, I've got so much coming up with my daughter, and I've got to drive somebody to it's always padded with excuses to soften it, because we were afraid that if we just said, no, I wouldn't like to do that, that would be perceived as being rude or petty or selfish or mean or any of those other things we've just talked about. And usually how we would say it is probably something like, I'd really love to say yes, but unfortunately, blah, blah, blah. I've got a prior engagement or whatever it is. Because we just don't want to say, no, I really don't want to do that. we hover and we dither and we feel uncomfortable and we oftentimes will become anxious. And in becoming anxious, have you ever watched someone who is trying to get out of something with you that you've asked them to do and watched their struggle? What happens? Well, they usually do become a little bit shifty. They can't really quite look you in the eye. And they usually become a little red-faced because they know that they're making it up as they go along, and you can see they're making it up as they go along. So we need to get past that, and we need to be able to state exactly how we feel, yes or no, and do it in a polite way. Sorry, that's just not something I want to do, you know?
I actually have a question for that.
Sure.
I've actually come into a situation where I've said, I know I can't make it to a certain event, but and without any excuses to follow.
Yeah.
And I found that this person has stopped talking to me.
Oh, dear.
question.
But,
so
you know,
I'm wondering, should you follow up and communicating with this person, or should you wait for them to communicate to you?
Well, let's
because
throw that onto the floor.
You've done wrong. You just said
you haven't
no.
done anything wrong. You stated your case. So you stated your case. So was it a matter of not wanting to go somewhere or do something with this person?
No,
was
I just simply I really couldn't go, and I just didn't follow it up with an excuse. I
with an excuse, you just said no, can't go or not going or whatever. So
I
what do? So what do the other callers on the line think about that? It should who is speaking, please?
It's Macarena.
Macarena. So please, would someone jump in and talk about this, Macarena, for a moment? What is it that one should do?
This is
should
Steve.
One be waiting now for the friend to come back and see if there's any ongoing communication, or is there something that Macarena could do to alleviate and soften the situation?
This is Steve.
Yes, Steve.
To me, it would depend on, you know, the relationship and if you wanted the relationship to go forward or move backwards, but...
Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with calling her up and saying, you know, I felt uncomfortable the other day when we had that discussion, and I said, no, I couldn't do that, and I want you to know that, you know, I still value our friendship, and I just wanted to see if you wanted to discuss anything with me.
Sure. That's a great idea.
That's a good option. I wasn't sure what to do because I didn't want to feel bad for simply just saying, no, I couldn't make it. Just like you said, right? You shouldn't really feel bad for it.
Nope.
But I just didn't know what would be the next move.
So Macarena, is this a person
curious.
You would like to maintain some kind of relationship with?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Okay, so it isn't someone that's, okay, the timing is such that it's time to part ways. It's not one of those people.
No, I don't think so. No.
Okay, so another way to approach that, Steve's suggestion is terrific. Another way to approach it is to actually just phone that person up and say, hey, I'm going out to do ABC today and thought that you might like to come. Do you want to go out with me for lunch? Going to do a little bit of shopping. You want to go out with me for a couple hours and we'll do lunch and a bit of shopping.
I guess
that opens the door. Pardon me?
I guess the reason I'm bringing this up is because just to kind of put it out there that sometimes these things will happen when you say no.
Absolutely, they sure will.
Prepared for it.
And, you know, Steve's option was good. You can just phone and say, you know, I wasn't comfortable with what happened, and I don't want to leave any hard feelings.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
Another thing is just jump right in, ask the person to go out with you to do something, and while you're out, you can say, oh, I felt a little bit, you know, some uncomfortable stuff going on when we had our last discussion, and I hope you weren't offended. I just, you know, it wasn't intentional. Right. Hope that everything's fine. So there's really two options there already. Anybody else have another option?
This is Bud.
Yeah.
How about a rain check?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So
you know what?
Like
that works really well.
So it sounds like it's in my court to really communicate back.
It probably is.
Okay.
It probably is. And you know, Bud, that's an excellent, excellent suggestion when we're in a place of having to decide, should we say yes or should we say no? Mm-hmm. And if we're leaning on the no for whatever reason, a rain check is really sweet. That's a great suggestion.
Thank you.
Why is that a great suggestion, folks? Well, I'll tell you why I think it is, and then we each have our own opinion. I think that's a great suggestion because that then leaves the floor open to me. Then say, sorry, I'd love a rain check, though. Can't do that. I'd love a rain check. That usually stops. People will go, oh, that's fine. So they're not interested in going out with me to do such and such. They're just not able this time. Then that leaves myself the option of phoning that friend later and saying, how about going doing this with me? I'm going here or I'm going there or I'm going to do this or come on over and watch the football game. Whatever that is, that leaves that door open for ongoing communication. You've offended no one. Great, great, great suggestion. Great suggestion.
Thank you.
Anyone else have any other ideas around that? Okay. Let's talk for just a moment about externalizing. And you know what? Pass that rain check thing on to your client. I think that's a great idea.
I will.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Externalizing. Let's talk about that for a moment. Whenever we have a problem with a relationship, whether it's a personal relationship or a professional level relationship or, you know, whatever it is, our human nature tends to dictate that we externalize the problem. We tend to blame the other person for the way that we're feeling. Now, that's perfectly human of us. That's the way we are. That's the way we're built until we teach ourselves to do something different. We all see the flaws in someone else without noticing our own, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do. That's just the way we are as humans. I mean, some of us see our flaws. We've been working on them for a while. There's still some there. But generally, as a human being, we tend to see everybody else's flaws first. And there are three tendencies that we follow when it comes to externalizing, and here they are. Overvaluing our contribution to the relationship and undervaluing the contribution of others. Also, criticizing others for being different from us rather than appreciating and building on those differences. And finally, seeing others' sins against us but not seeing ours against them is another one. So it's clear in the above examples that none of the behaviors are assertive there. They may be aggressive and they may be somewhat passive, depending on the individual's personality, perhaps. So why do we externalize and make things someone else's problem? It doesn't really do any good, in fact, to do that. And in many cases, it makes the situation more serious, in its outcome than not. So it's not really a helpful thing to do. Why we do it, we're not sure. Probably because it's just easier to blame the other person. That's what we're used to. But it's certainly an area that you'll want to discuss with your clients at some point, that they don't externalize, that they're not the victim. There's choices along the road to make, and that they can make those choices and make them clearly and make them positively. So there are a few reasons why we might do this. Being unable to see things from the other person's point of view is probably one of the reasons we do that. Finding it easier to spot someone else's faults, for sure, is one of the reasons we do that. Not wanting to feel the discomfort of facing our own faults. Hard to take, but probably one of the reasons we do it. And then finally, tending to be attracted to people who will reinforce our externalizing. You often will find that's the case. Birds of a feather do tend to flock together when it comes to things like this. And if you think about friends that you have, you know, the people that like to sit in corners and talk about little stories and talk about people, and the friends who are very outgoing and like to spread themselves at a party and wander around and share with everyone equally, and you don't find them backbiting, you don't find them telling stories, you usually find little groups of these people that tend to flock together. So that's a good thing, too, to maybe perhaps be aware of the kind of people that we flock with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of every now and then, sort of take a temperature gauge of just where you are with the friends that you choose and how you react with one another and make conversation with one another and what's surrounding that conversation. It's probably a good thing to do. Let's talk about avoidance for just a minute. A passive tendency, avoidance, is tough relationship issues. It sort of means not having to face them and deal with them. That's what we're avoiding. We're just not putting a face to the issues. We're just avoiding everything. We know we really should sit down and have a sensible discussion with someone, but we're just avoiding it. Why? It's easier. A typical scenario is when someone does or says something that causes us to experience a strong negative emotion. And that would be anger or frustration or embarrassment or humiliation or perhaps even disappointment. And rather than assertively dealing with the issue, we stay quiet and upset for a while or for hours or for days or for weeks, and we replay the scene over and over and over in our minds. but we remain silent and angry until at some point the intensity just subsides. We just give it up finally, hopefully. We then decide not to talk about it, and then what happens? We harbor it. So at some point, something is said or done that triggers the memories, and what happens when that happens? Everything comes flooding back, just like it happened yesterday. Just like it happened yesterday. It's there to us clear as a bell. The human mind's a marvelous thing. Brings things back in an instant when it wants to. And still we might say nothing. Usually because we have fear of conflict or natural dislike for situations that cause displeasure to us, whatever that is. We also are afraid of how others may react if we bring it up. It always comes back around to that. We may be sacked if we have a conflict with the person we work for, right? We may make our partner up and leave if we have some kind of a conflict that really, really ensues. As the incidents of externalizing and avoidance build up over time, we probably become rather like pressure cookers with psychological steam sort of building up in our head. I always think that's kind of an interesting little visual. When we avoid assertive discussion, the problem resolution, you know, the steam builds up, it's fueled, and it's fueled time and time again as it comes back. And inevitably, it really does not help anything. And when all this keeps coming back around, what happens with this avoidance and externalization? Well, put-downs happen, making someone feel of less value than you, fault-finding and criticizing, blowing up and acting aggressively, arguing constantly and senselessly about nothing where you can't even remember what the whole thing was that started the argument. We've all been there. Lecturing and talking down to others, or cold shoulders given to people and ignoring people, or complaining to others, you know, and griping with others. So all of those things come into play. Sooner or later, the pressure cooker will blow and aggressive behavior is going to come out of that. So we need to take steps along the way to educate the client in a manner that this will not happen. Help them take small baby steps in learning how to be assertive in a very proactive and helpful way that's going to get them to the goal and desires that they want. Let's talk about action versus reaction for just a moment. Reaction is either passive or aggressive. We really do make the choice. I mean, we don't think about making these choices all the time because they come to us so quick and we make those instant choices. We don't really think we're thinking about it, but we are. Reaction is either passive or aggressive. We choose to avoid or we choose to not avoid. We choose to avoid or we choose to jump into the action is what I'm trying to say. Action is assertive. It's always assertive. It means making the first move, initiating a situation. That's assertive. So for Macarena right now, she's going to be assertive in her relationship with her friend, and she's going to make a positive move. She's going to set something into action there. So too many of us react passively, waiting for someone else to act, which is what really Macarena would be doing that if she's just waiting for that friend to come back around one more time. So assertiveness is taking your power back into your own hands and doing something about something, whatever it is. So let's quickly discover the rules of assertion, because there are some. I don't know whether you'll have them in your notes there or not, but they will be coming in your notes to you today. So quickly, let's cover the rules of assertion. And generally speaking, there are 10. Respect yourself. Who I am and what I do. Number 2, recognize my own needs as an individual. And that's separate from what is expected of me in the particular roles as husband or wife or partner or daughter or son or whatever that might be. Number 3 would be make clear I statements about how I feel and think. For example, I feel very uncomfortable with your decision. Short and sweet. Number 4, allow myself to make mistakes, recognizing that it's normal and acceptable to make mistakes. That's freedom, my friends. Number 5, change my mind if I choose. Number 6, ask for thinking it over time. For example, when people would ask you something and they expect an answer right away, I would like to think it over and I'll get back to you with my decision at the end of the week. Perfectly acceptable thing to do. Number 7, allow myself to enjoy my success. Are we really enjoying our success? Number 8, ask for what I want rather than hoping someone else will notice what I want. Recognize that I am responsible for the behavior, I'm not responsible for the behavior of others. I am not responsible for the behaviors of others. And finally, respect other people and their right to be assertive and expect the same in return. So to summarize assertive behavior, everyone needs to take on some learning about assertive behavior and around assertive behavior. We all need to be constantly looking at that and working on that in order to bring our lives up to a better standard for sure, and to allow ourselves to be more effectively communicating with people. The client will need to learn different types of behavior to replace the old habits. Old habits can be unlearned in time. It's just a matter of repeating and repeating and repeating. Repetition is the key. To be clear in their aims and objectives, clients should be encouraged to write down the following lists in order to have direction for which they can assert themselves. So lists like I want to achieve lists, what I want for my relationships lists, what I want to learn lists, what I want to visit lists, what I want to make lists, what I want to own lists, what I want to work lists, or as work as well. Some research studies actually suggest that being assertive also can help people cope better with mental health problems. Did you know that?
No.
Yep, including depression, anorexia, bulimia, social anxiety disorder, and schizophrenia. It's been proven that all of those things are helped by the individual learning how to be assertive. So remember, being assertive takes time and practice. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, but as you slowly work on this with your clients, their self-esteem and their life force is just going to get so much better, just so much stronger, and their life is going to be so much more fulfilling and there'll be less hassle in it. If you spent years silencing yourself, become more assertive. Becoming more assertive probably won't happen overnight. It won't happen overnight. On the flip side, if you've been driven to aggression probably, you know, through your communication because of anger issues, being able to cool down isn't going to happen overnight, for sure. It's something that's going to happen slowly, but it's worth the forward movement and exploring. But if you have a client, rehearse the aim for small wins. And if he or she still doesn't seem to achieve their goals, you might want to consider giving the option of planting the seed with them that perhaps they should get some empowerment training. Perhaps they should seek out an assertiveness trainer who does nothing but teach someone to be assertive and to do it in the proper way. If you're just not making any headway with your client, that is an option. It is an option. Get some professional, formal assertiveness training to add to what they're doing with you as a coach will be helpful. So in closing today, we're right at the top of the hour. Let me say, being assertive is being able to say in no way that is clear and understandable while we, at the same time, still caring about others' persons' feelings. So we're always moving forward, saying what we mean in a clear and understandable way, but always being caring about other people's feelings. It's also being able to communicate and express our desires and our wishes and our feelings and all of those good stuff in every area of our life. And a person who is a healthy, assertive person is able to do these things without a lot of concern or worry about what other people are thinking about them in the long term. Any comments you'd like to make about assertion before we leave today?
I was thinking that even to tell a client what the fundamental human rights are
mm-hmm.
could make a huge difference because people may not really know that.
They probably don't know that. Was that Linda?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, Linda. You know, they probably don't know that. I don't know if we have a sheet in your supplementary forms that is actually the fundamental human rights, but we should actually put one up there in there for you so that you have that. Or you can, you know, type them out yourself. But, you know, it is it, there is some absolutely, there's some form of release in telling people what their fundamental human mm-hmm. rights are. Because you're right, I don't think they know.
Yeah.
We all know what some of them are, but we never really sit and look at them. Not really.
Nobody taught us that when we were children.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Mom wouldn't teach us that, would she? Of course not. We need to remain, you know, we need to remain in some kind of control with kids. So we don't exactly sit them down and read them their human rights. And that's just the way we're raised. I mean, you know, that's just the way we are as people. So, yeah, I think it's an eye-opener. I think it's an eye-opener for most people. So there's no specific reading to go with this lesson, but there is a growth exercise. So just write down for yourself within your notes, why is it important to be assertive and why is it going to be important for you to share what assertiveness is to your client? I'd like you just to do a little homework on that. And if anybody wants to open some discussion about assertiveness on the message board, please do, because it's a great, great topic. Once you've taught a client how to be assertive, you're going to change their life in such a tremendous positive way. Another one would be to list five of the fundamental human rights and what you think about them. Do a little writing on five of your favorite fundamental human rights. And you will be getting them in this transport. Are they in your notes right now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
I wasn't sure if they were in your notes. And then briefly write about body language. What you think about body language. Go out and have a coffee one day and sit there and look at the different people sitting around in the coffee shop at a Starbucks or something like that and just look around you and see what's going on with body language. It's really an interesting thing to sort of explore and sort of delve into and write about. It's kind of fun. Any other comments before we close for the day?
This is Tana.
Yes, Tana.
The thing that's been hard for me, and I'm wondering what the instructions are. I mean, there's a point where you decide to be more assertive, and then and when you're doing it with close relations and you have an idea of how they're going to respond, like with the like illogical logic and that kind of thing. I mean,
yep.
how do you continue on? You know, like, you know, thank you for sharing, but I still, you know, want to fly out of my suit. I mean, like, you know, it's sometimes harder with people you know because you know how they respond.
Well, you know why it's harder with people we know is because the people know us.
Yeah.
And the minute we start to change, what does that mean? That means they're now off kilter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you're not doing the norm. You're not reacting the way you always did. You're giving a very simple explanation. I'm sorry, I can't do that this week. And you left it at that, where normally you say, sorry, I can't do that. I got the kids, you know, and I got to make dinner and I got to be home. And, you know, and you usually, the minute you start changing what you normally would do is going to cause people to wonder what's going on with you. What's
mm-hmm.
different? And the hardest thing is going to be dealing with family because they know you the best. Or you're one really, you know, your best friend, or if you have several best friends, whatever that is. Those are the people that are going to see the change. You know, and really begin to react to it more quickly than anyone else. There's no doubt about it.
What do you do when you get flustered, though? I remember, I had assertiveness training because my mom was steeped in the whole Wayne Dyer thing in the 70s, and he recommended the broken record technique. You know, you just keep saying
yep.
the same thing over and over.
Yep.
You know,
so
at some
you
point you have
me?
To check out of the conversation. But, I mean, what do you do in between when you're trying to let people know, you know, that, okay, there's a change in status quo and you're going to have to adjust?
Absolutely. You're going to have to adjust. Anybody have an idea for Tana about that? What do you say to the friends who are noticing that things are changing? You all have a good idea. Somebody jump in.
I think you can be honest and tell them that you're stretching and you're trying some new things out and you don't feel like giving an excuse or a reason or whatever, but it just doesn't feel right for you. And so the answer is no, you don't want to do it.
Yep. Yep. And you know, Tana, you're going to get you're going to get reaction. You know, if you do what Steve that was Steve, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you do what Steve suggested, you're still going to get reaction, but you know what? Eventually people are going to get the hang that Tana's doing something different.
And you can do it in a gentle way.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure,
say,
absolutely.
You know, I hear that, you know, you might not like this or might not like that, but, you know, right for right now, it's just not what I want to do.
And, you know, for close friends and family, you know, it's easy to say, it's easy to say something like, do what Steve has suggested and then say something like, you know, I've been reading about being assertive and how good it is for us to be assertive and just sort of to say what we mean, and I'm doing some exploring around that. I'm reading some books. Let's talk about assertion. You know, like, make your friends and family aware of what's going on and that you're trying to work on those things for the better. Not to cut them out of the loop, not to make them feel bad, not to feel like they're not moving forward, but that you're just experimenting. You know, I'm starting to read books about being assertive. You know, assertiveness says that we shouldn't be giving excuses to each other. Just mean what we say and say what we mean and do it in a nice way. And that's what I'm trying to do.
I think you're right about that.
Yeah. I mean, it won't work for everybody, but I would try it.
It's just like when you're going on a diet or something, you'd ask your family members to support you because you feel that it's important to you. That's exactly
what's
right. In this situation.
And you know what? You can also get your friends and family involved in that. You know, once you explain it that way, this is what I'm doing, this is the way I'm trying to evolve. You know, if it's a good friend and they're not understanding why you're doing that, say, now let's both of us try it for a while. Let's see if this assertion thing works. You know? And get people that are very close to you involved in that. How was that? Okay? Hopefully that was a good idea for you. Okay, so we're at the top of the hour. If you'll give me just 10 seconds here, we'll close.